Thank you so much. I honestly have to congratulate the speakers and Billy Campbell for the culture of civility that he has imposed in the society. Everyone was just perfect, 20 minutes or less, made my job super, super easy. So thank you so much. While you think about the first question, let me tell you that something is it's a true story, but it sounds like a joke. I don't know if it was in Peru or in Bolivia, one of these countries that has many of these turns from mostly from authoritarian to authoritarian government. One of these presidents assumes power and speaking to the in the plaza to all the population, he starts saying, "To my friends, everything. To my enemy, the law." Because he controls the law. The laws are controlled by judicial systems that are controlled by the secret services in 2/3 of the world and 4/5 of Latin America. That's the rule of law in Latin America. John Atley, and who's to...
Okay, thank you, Alex. I'd like to ask Professor Sardon to elaborate a little more on the proportional representation, but also to mention that it's a subject that is hardly discussed in American academia. I came to it, Hernando de Soto's first book, he said, why democracy doesn't work in Latin America? He said, because of proportional representation. And in America, the tendency, both right and left, is, well, the Latin culture, they can't do it, etc. Instead of focusing on our system is so unique. And I've written about this also. It's on the internet. It's 7 languages translated. If you look, proportional representation, Utley, U-T-L-E-Y, it comes up. And it came out in the Wall Street Journal in Russian, in Moscow. It's on Cato, all Cato's foreign language sites in translations. And I focus on this question, but the point with proportional representation is their party lists, the bosses determine who's on the list. Any reformer is usually kept out, and individual congressmen, you can't vote against a corrupt congressman like a Rostenkowski in our system. You can only vote against the whole party. And Venezuela collapsed its democracy because it had a proportional system. For 20 years, you could only vote out the bad guys by bringing the bad guys who were there 5 years earlier. And the whole system is not discussed in American academia. And I urge you, all the people here, to focus a little more on that as a reason. And finally, Asia, the Asian tigers followed the Anglo-Saxon system. None of them use proportional representation, except some have 10-20% of the seats. India held together probably because it does not use proportional representation, otherwise it split apart, and etc. Anyway, that's
you answer your question, it seems.
Well, certainly. But you can say a little more, and specifically Chile is the only country that... Okay.
I agree with everything you said, John. I think you are completely right. The system of representation affects both dimension of the political system, both the quantitative dimension, it creates a fragmentation, but also the qualitative dimension of the political system, since it affects accountability and responsible representation. But I agree with everything that you have just said.
Alex, make a brief comment. I agree, and I don't want us to miss this either, which is it's not just the institution, it's not just the structure of proportional or single member districts. It is the culture that informed that and made that one attractive over the other. In our system, the idea was consensus and compromise can come when people are represented in a district that person who represents them owes them representation, whereas the other one turns it into a big food fight. And so those are values supporting those already. It's not just it happens to be that. So,
Carl Zebra, I've been following with great interest in this, I guess, is to Mr. Williamson. The recent reform of the judicial system that Calderon was able to actually get through the Mexican Congress. Do you have any hopes that that will perhaps establish better the rule of the law and perhaps permit some cleanup of what is generally reputed to be one of the most corrupt judicial systems in the world?
I'll answer that very briefly. Is this picking up? Yeah. I'll answer that very briefly. I think it's perhaps the brightest spot in Mexican politics, Mexican government today.
Glenn David Cox from the Francisco Marroquin University in Guatemala. Jose Luis Sardón, I think any gathering on the culture of liberty in the Americas should consider the observations of the great Argentine liberal of the 19th century, who I'm referring, of course, to
Juan Bautista Alberdi.
Juan Bautista Alberdi, exactamente, who observed among his many great observations that the Latin American system preserved a patrimonialist tradition in its political and constitutional structure in the 19th century, and he warned against patrimonialism being the state as the source of wealth creation, the state being the source of opportunity creation, and the dependence of the political structure on the state. And so I wonder if these cycles of authoritarianism and liberalization are related in some way to the inability of, in a constitutional sense, in a political sense, the inability of the cultures, the political culture, to eliminate this patrimonial tradition in which there's a reliance on the state, and it doesn't really matter which political party comes into power, conservatives or liberals, or even the revolutionary governments in the 20th century like Mexico, they end up regenerating the same patrimonial system, which ultimately explodes in what the Mexican liberal of the beginning of the 19th century, Jose Luis Maria Mora, called empleomanía, where political parties are essentially machinery to employ people rather than manifestations of political demands made at a civil society level. And I see all manifestations, whether they be conservative, whether they be liberal, whether they be revolutionary, they end up regenerating this patrimonial tradition, which goes back to the colonial period created by Felipe II, Philip II, and the establishment of the colonial state apparatus, which survived independence. I wonder if you could comment on that. And Chilton Williamson.
Okay. Don't you want to take a turn?
Well, the second question is very
short,
brief, so I'll just throw it out there. Very knowledgeable presentation on the history of Mexico. We heard in the previous panel in the morning an observation that the Mexican Constitution of 1917 was somehow the fraternal equivalent of the emerging Bolshevik Constitution of 1918, and I wonder how that struck you from someone who has obviously studied the constitutional traditions of Mexico. It seems to me that the Constitution of 1917.
Well, yeah, now again, you're commenting.
Okay.
Well, I have said in my presentation, and I believe that the most important thing, of course, is economic education. If you have a ruler that understands prices and economic freedom, it will work. Even, I would say, even in a personal regime. For example, we have the case of Brunei or the these tiny little countries in the Gulf of Persia that are exploding in wealth because they have rulers that have been educated in England and they understand the price system, so they have some degree of economic freedom. But in the long run, it is obviously important to have an adequate political structure. And that structure can come only from moderated regimes, like the one in the US. And I would like to add a little bit of the previous question concerning the election of judges in Mexico. For example, here in the US, I think the most important expression of the two-party system is the election of judges for the Supreme Court. For example, you have this problem with this a very interesting jurist, Bork. You didn't get it, Bork, but you get after that Scalia, which is a very important figure, I would say, and I admire him very much. In Latin America, the election of judges is very, very bloody, you know. In last year in Peru, it was we went nuts because we elected 4 of the 7 members of the Constitutional Tribunal, and I cannot tell you that the story, how bloody it was, you know. And why was that? Because the Congress has 7 parties now, and all of them have their candidate, and it was so terrible. So you need really to support the rule of law, you need to have a two-party system in Congress.
I actually, Professor Fernandez Moreira had to say about the Constitution of 1917 actually flashed through my mind when I was reading that part of the talk, and I almost broke off and to make a mention on the side, and I didn't want to interrupt the flow of what I was saying. I'm far from being a specialist on the Constitution of 1917, but it was put together at Querétaro. And it was largely the work of the Constitutionalist Party, which was Carranza's. And knowing what I do know of Carranza, I can well believe Professor Fernandez Moreira's description of characterization of 1917.
Darío Fernández Moreira.
Yes, this is a general question to the panel of interest to the Latin Americanists, but also to the North American members of the panel. And that is whether you think that American society is becoming more and more Latin Americanized. And let me explain. I come from Illinois, I come from the city of Chicago, and I come from Cook County. And believe me, I can almost match point by point some of the stories that you have presented here regarding the problems of Latin America. In the last 20 years in Illinois, we have had several governors go to prison on corruption charges for taking money from businessmen, using the public employment system to garner votes for their re-elections, all sorts of charges that you can imagine. We have aldermen in the city of Chicago regularly go to prison for similar charges. I mean, this is a common thing in Illinois. We have judges periodically go to prison for similar charges of corruption. The last operation directed by the federal government against judicial corruption in Illinois was called a silver shovel. That was a euphemism for what the shovel was actually shoveling. And of course, one of the candidates for president has been for 7 years part of that system and did not make any effort to change it. We have elected officials who basically leave to their children their position. That happens in the Illinois Assembly, and that happens in the city of Chicago, and that happens with the mayoral office, and it happens with the city council of Chicago. It's what has been called a hereditary democracy that we have. I mean, everybody has heard about dead people voting in Chicago, but that's just a minor and picturesque anecdote. The reality is political corruption of a massive scale. And at the national level in this country, we have more and more voter fraud in the sense of hundreds of thousands of people who were being registered to vote, who really have no qualifications of citizenship to vote. So somebody earlier, a gentleman mentioned Bork's crawling toward Gomorrah or something like that. I haven't read the book, I've heard about it. But I don't think there is much hope in the United States at the present time for Latin America to look up to us.
So yours was a comment or was a, despite bipartisan, despite that you have two parties, you have these problems? I don't know if you want to, someone wants to comment on that. No?
Well, I agree with a lot of that. I think the difference, though, is that we've always had these problems in the United States, but they have rarely dominated the electoral scene or been terribly significant. There's certainly examples of that. The problem today, I think, is it's getting worse because people are more complacent about it and more focused just on their individual pocketbooks. So I see all of these, I mean, I think what's happening with Acorn right now is unprecedented in that it's 10 states at least are investigating one entity's abuses. So it's very widespread. And my guess is it's not gonna matter to most people. And it's a knife in the heart of our democracy for that kind of thing to happen.
Yeah, but don't blame the Latin Americans for that. No.
I'll just add one comment to that. In regards to Tocqueville's prediction about Latin American democracy, I think Tocqueville would be horrified if he were to come back to the United States today and make the tour that he took 170 years ago.
Alex, I would like to add that maybe this problem in the U.S. has an institutional origin. I think it was in 1917 that you changed the way of electing senators. And some historians have established a link between this coming of mass democracy to the U.S. with the election of senators directly by the people and not by the Congress of each state. And now that you have to choose between two senators, you are in trouble.
Just as a follow-up to that, we've had machine politics in the U.S. for a long time, but machines have always been ultimately constrained by, to some extent, the rule of law and the independence of the judiciary, which is an institution we have here, which is not as strong. And of course, the daily machine is a perfect, it's one of the last bastions of true machine politics. But my question is this. America is often, I'm sorry, I'm Sterling Burnett, I'm with the National Center for Policy Analysis, didn't identify myself, my apologies. We often at least self-identify and sometimes are identified from without as sort of a unique experiment here in America. And I guess my question is, it would be for the panel as a whole, but it goes beyond Latin America, is why have we stayed so unique? I weary of hearing about democracy. We're not a democracy, but we tout democracy everywhere. We're a constitutional republic with a very specific kind of constitution, not the 300-page constitution that even the state of Texas has, but a very general constitution that separates powers. And it has not, it's rarely been adopted anywhere else. Instead, the parliamentary system, the proportional representation system has become widespread, and I don't understand why our system, when to some extent our country's looked up to for our economic progress that I think the constitutional structure has helped foster, and the independence that it has helped foster has been looked up to, but our system of government has not been adopted almost anywhere with a president as opposed to a president, a prime minister, proportional representation. Why has it never taken off in your opinion?
Well, the Republic of Peru was founded in 1821, and we believe that we copied your constitution, but we were wrong, because from the very beginning, we included other arrangements, constitutional arrangements. For example, in Peru, ministers can be congressmen, and are not necessarily in Congress, but can be congressmen, and Congress can dismiss ministers, so it's a kind of mixture of presidential and parliamentary system in Peru. Later we have proportional representation, but we still believe that we are a presidential system. But we live in a mistake, of course.
Can I just add something very quickly? I think the reason that ours has not been adopted so much is because most people have not wanted what the American founders were trying to lay out. They wanted something more like what the French were coming up with or someone else. So I think, and really quickly, democracy, I appreciate what you said, Sterling, but democracy for me is shorthand for constitutional Republican representative government. You can imagine what it would be like in the U.S. government and some of the structures that we're in to try to explain to people what you mean if you added all those terms. It would just get
difficult. So I sort of like to think democracy now means what we mean when we talk about constitutional Republican forms of government. I don't know anybody trying to have a democracy now that doesn't want a constitution and they're having representatives and all that.
Well, there's the example of Great Britain. I mean, it's an unwritten constitution. It's not a republic, it's a monarchy, and it works just as well as our system does. It works for them and ours works for us.
Lisa. My name is Luisa Blanco from Pepperdine University, and I have a question for Shilin Williamson. Yes. I would like to hear from you if you have any insight about, based on your historical analysis of Mexico, on the possibility for the energy reform. How do you see that? Do you think that there is hope? Or that may just prove what you mentioned about the difficulty
for energy. Do you say for energy reform?
Yeah, in
well,
Mexico.
Well, of course, Pemex is one of perhaps the most outstanding example of a business sector that was nationalized. Calderon wants to privatize this, all the more power to him.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, like, based on your historical analysis, do you see hope for that?
Oh, yes. Well, Calderon is trying to take the country in a very good direction.
Yeah.
But the drug crisis has just become acute down there.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that his hand will be forced. He's lucky if he doesn't get assassinated. And I'm afraid that the level of violence and institutional political corruption will simply become so enormous that it overwhelms all of these good attempts that he's making.
Okay.
That's all.
Thank you.
We are going to go 5 minutes more. So Glendon, if you wanted to comment, I know afterwards, there's less line over there, so if you don't get but perhaps I think we might have that. Professor?
I would suggest that perhaps...
Can you...
Lino Grande, I'm a professor of constitutional law at the University of Texas. And I would suggest that perhaps the United States Constitution hasn't been more copied is because it's highly imperfect. And sensible people would do well to avoid it in many ways. The idea that you have a president elected for 4 years and not responsible to governmental change as in a parliamentary system is really questioned by a lot of people. A system where California with 32 million people has the same number of senators as Wyoming with 500,000, you know, is ludicrous. But you have a less representative system of government. Brooklyn has 10 times as many people as Wyoming and no senator. The main feature of perhaps American government, the most distinctive thing that's grown up with this Constitution, unfortunately has been copied, and that's judicial review. We've arrived at a system of judiocracy. Virtually all the basic social policy issues this country today are made by the vote of 9 lawyers, unelected, holding office for life, and it usually turns on just one, the most powerful man in the country, Justice Kennedy. And that system existed nowhere, and now exists almost everywhere. Another example of the unfortunate influence of this country over the world, I think. I think the comments about Chicago are perhaps a little overdone. It's, you know, the offices are inherited. Well, of course, yeah, Clinton became a senator from New York, she's the wife of a president, now almost became president herself. George Bush would never have been suggested for governor of Texas if his name wasn't Bush, and then he became president. But that's to be expected. Professors' children have better chances of becoming professor, and that a family gets known. It also has a sort of an opposite aspect. Jeb Bush might have been the most suitable candidate for the Republican Party, but he was sort of excluded because his name was Bush. We just had enough Bushes at that point. So I don't think you can, as bad as Cook County is, and it's one of our more, with the Daily Machine, it's one of our more extremes, I don't think it really is comparable to Mexico.
Thank you, Professor. Let's try to focus also on Latin America and some of the, not
yes,
get stuck on this.
One of the most...
Can you introduce yourself, Mr. Moore?
I am Craig Moore from Houston, Texas. And one of the observations or questions I'd like to pose is that one of the unique aspects of the United States that does not exist elsewhere in the world is the right of private ownership of property and its effect on American history. And what I'd like to know is, with respect to the South American countries, what about the right of private ownership of property and how this might affect and stabilize countries? Thank you.
Anyone? First of all, I would like to react to your comment. I believe that all systems of representation have problems. Of course, the problem of the American system is that the representatives are too much linked with the constituencies. So that's the explanation of so many pork barrel projects, among other things. So you have this problem also. But the other arrangement that makes that every citizen counts like one, like this, have the same weight, the only way to have this is to have a single national district. If you have a Senate elected in single national district, for example, you will have that every citizen counts the same. But that will produce the fragmentation of the party system, you know. And that will have terrible consequences, as the Latin American experience proves. So despite that the American system have problems, I still believe that it's much better than Latin American arrangement. Yeah, but maybe, I don't know where to see for other. In relation with the private property, of course, in theory, we have, we respect private property. But for example, in Peru's constitution, we have 24 fundamental rights, and one of the 24 is private property. So there's not much emphasis there, you know.
Can you both do a question and short comment, and then and together first, Dr. Morton Blackwell?
Morton Blackwell with the Leadership Institute. I can hardly believe I am standing up here to give a position that contrasts with Professor Graglia, but I do have another suggestion. I believe that the United States has. I believe in our exceptionalism, that we have more liberty and therefore more prosperity. I think the reason for the contrast between us and other countries is that to a great extent, the framers of our Constitution had as their top priority to make it impossible or very difficult for government to do some things. And in contrast, the framers of the governments of other countries mistakenly wanted to make their governments effective.
Okay. Yeah. Glendon, no, it's okay. The topic is Latin America. Come on.
Okay.
Come on, Glenn.
As the topic is Latin America, let me just say that Octavio Paz, the great Mexican writer, has been mentioned a couple times this morning, and one of his more famous observations had to do with communications across cultural lines, and he said after his more than 80 years of experience on the planet that he had learned that between North Americans and Latin Americans there was essentially no dialogue, there were two eternal monologues. And I think that, you know, devoting the session of the Philadelphia Society to the culture of liberty in America is a great idea, but I heard Jose Luis Sardón say that there was no translation in Spanish for accountability. And in the classes I teach, I come across similar problems in that there are terms in Spanish political culture that you can't translate to English either, like sociedad estamental. How do you get across the concept that there's a caste state-oriented society that informs the political tradition, and North Americans are not aware of this strong characteristic of Latin American political culture.
We have it's too late now to answer, you know. So we have some sessions in the afternoon, and I think you can bring it up there. I just want to thank everyone who asked a question or made a comment, but also Dr. Paul Bonicelli, Jose Luis Sardón, and Chilton Williamson for a very great session, so I ask you to give them a round of applause.